From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. The presidential campaign of Senator Hillary Clinton has been getting some unwanted press. One of her donors, Norman Hsu, was arrested by the FBI yesterday after failing to show up in court in relation to a 15-year-old felony conviction. So why is this coming up now? For the second time, Hsu has skipped bail, and a financial paper trail indicates that he may have flouted campaign finance laws. Senator Clinton and others who have received donations from Hsu have plans to donate the money to charity. For more on this and other stories, we've got ABC correspondent Ron Claiborne, Chicago Sun-Times columnist Laura Washington, and world editor for the Miami Herald, John Yearwood. Welcome, folks.
Hi.
Hi. Hi.
So, Ron, let me start with you. This is a multiply layered story. It's kind of like a big old birthday cake where you've got this guy, Norman Hsu, who has made his money arguably making sort of knockoff clothes for, you know, discount designer knockoffs. And he may allegedly have been funneling money to other people to get around campaign finance laws. Does this hurt Senator Hillary Clinton that this keeps coming up in the news?
In the long – look, the election, if she's the nominee, is 14 months away. I think voters will not know or remember who Hsu is by then, but it doesn't look good right now when you have a guy who with allegedly this kind of skullduggerous background, if I can make up a word, as a chief fundraiser for her. It just doesn't look good.
And, you know, Laura, when – we think about campaign finance laws, a lot of times there's this look at, you know, how much are big corporations influencing American politics. The question that I have among many is, what does he get out of this? Do we have any idea what he would get out of being a campaign finance bundler if, in fact, that's what he is?
Well, it's obvious that people give money to candidates in expectations of many things: favors, attention, clout. In Hsu's case, it seems that he was trying to create the perception that he had clout, that he had connections, because it helped his business. There's been reports about the number of times he bulldozed his way into events to take photographs with candidates. This is probably the expectation that many of these folks have. It's not necessarily a direct favor, but it's all about influence peddling. And to answer the earlier question about, you know, in the long term, will it hurt Hillary Clinton? I think in the long term, it may hurt many of these candidates. Remember, Hillary was not the only person to accept money from Hsu. Many people did. And whether or not it's going to have any impact, I guess, to pardon the pun, it depends on how many other shoes are going to drop along the way here. There's hundreds of thousands of people that are giving to these presidential campaigns, and there's got to be some dirty laundry in a lot of those contributions.
John, is this a situation where it's just going to be really, really rough for almost any candidate to completely vet all the people who are giving them money?
It is, Fry, and indeed you would expect that there's someone in the basement of her campaign headquarters vetting all these names. But given the number of donors we've been seeing, the tens and hundreds of thousands, I can understand why it's very, very difficult. Also, I just want to take a little issue with a comment that it may not hurt Hillary. There's been a great deal of conversation in the campaign, as you know, about the corrupting influence of money. And what I expect, if you bundle this with other stories about lobbyists, it could hurt Hillary at some point, because she's been the one with the big bullseye about taking money from lobbyists. And now we're talking about taking money from people like Hsu. I understand certainly that others are involved, but I think it's something that the campaign certainly has to be very wary about.
All right, look at Barack Obama, though. He has made an issue and implied that Hillary is you know, sort of captive to the lobbyists, that he's not taking lobbyist money. But there's been a lot of reporting in Chicago about a gentleman by the name of Tony Resco, who is currently under indictment, who did a lot to support Barack Obama throughout his career. And Barack Obama had to return some campaign funds to him. And look at that. No one's talking about that. So Barack Obama, who set himself up as a paragon of virtue when it comes to campaign finance reform, is not getting hurt by this. Hillary Clinton, I think, will probably slide too, at least in the time.
You know, the reality is that these candidates, this race is going to be incredibly expensive by the time it's all over. And first and foremost, they want money. I think they're not thinking about initially, or maybe subsequently they will, the background of Hsu. He was well known for the last several years as a as a big-time fundraiser for Democrats. So I imagine Hillary Clinton's campaign would say, hey, look, we'll happily take any money that he can help us raise. And I would draw a distinction between lobbyists. There is a pretty ugly perception by many people that if you're taking money from lobbyists, that just doesn't look good. That does not look good. And Hillary Clinton has not yet renounced this source of income. Hsu was a fundraiser, ostensibly, and these candidates, all of them, are happy to have people like Hsu insofar as he was able to bring in lots of money, and they love money.
Well, I want to move on to another politician. This is something where, you know, I have to say it's probably a TGIF moment for Senator Larry Craig because he's had a rough week. So the Republican senator from Idaho says he plans to stay in office if he can get his original guilty plea dismissed. And these plans for staying in office were revealed on Wednesday when he left a message for his lawyer, Billy Martin, on the wrong voicemail. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing. The owner of the voicemail box leaked it to the press. Here it is.
Billy, this is Larry Craig calling. You can reach me on my cell. Arlen Specter is now willing to come out in my defense, arguing that it appears by all that he knows I've been railroaded and all of that. Having all of that, we've reshaped my statement a little bit to say it is my intent to resign on September 30. I think it is very important for you to make as bold a statement as you are comfortable with this afternoon, and I would hope you could make it in front of the cameras. I think it would help drive the story that I'm willing to fight, that I've got quality people out there fighting in my defense, and that this thing could take a new turn or a new shape, has that potential.
You know, all of us have those moments where it's like, uh-oh, wait, I'm wearing the right shoe on the left foot. And I don't know, Laura, does this show a certain degree of ineptitude more than malfeasance?
You're right. You're right to laugh, Farai. This guy just doesn't get it. You know, he talks about Billy Martin making a bold statement on his behalf. I wish he could make a bold statement about anything. Mistake after mistake after mistake. He made a mistake going into that bathroom. Whatever happened in there, we won't know for sure, but that was a mistake. He made a mistake pleading guilty to a crime that he claims that he didn't commit under a lot of pressure. He made a mistake resigning. Apparently, he apparently thought so after the fact because then as we know, he started to back up and implied that he might recant his resignation. He hasn't made any smart moves all the way down the line. So, It's his fault. I mean, he has only himself to blame.
Ron, Craig sent this voicemail on Saturday afternoon on the way to the press conference where he would announce his intent to resign. So can you kind of clear up exactly what he seemed to be doing chronologically?
Well, the bathroom, the restroom episode in Minneapolis Airport was back in June, and he subsequently, a couple of months later, he says, without the advice of counsel, which is probably the case, pleaded guilty to a charge of disorderly conduct, not the original lewd behavior charge. I guess he was thinking that this thing would be kept quiet. That's mighty naive of him. And, of course, it did get out, the allegations against him in very graphic detail. And then his fortunes just went rapidly downhill from there, where the Republicans in the Senate deserted him almost to the man and woman, except for his fellow senator from Idaho. Our understanding was they wanted him to be out of office before Congress returned from the August recess. He did instead made that statement about his intent to resign, clearly leaving himself what he thought was an escape hatch. And earlier this week, it looked like he was trying to exploit that. He was going to try to clear his name using Arlen Specter's comments as his support. Last I hear is now he says if he cannot get this conviction overturned, he will leave office, and I'm not sure how he could get that overturned, but, you know, the legal system works in strange ways.
Now, John, this is a case where you have some very clear ethical implications, but it's also become, in some ways, kind of a man-bites-dog story where there's just so many different crazy things that have happened. Is that, at a time when we're leading up to the report on Iraq by General Petraeus, is this the kind of thing that maybe we shouldn't be spending as much time on? And I say that fully acknowledging that I'm asking you to comment on it.
I'm not quite sure how much time we should spend on it, Farai, but certainly it is a big story, and it is an interesting, and some may say titillating story. But I think, though, that I'm not quite sure if your show is heard in Idaho, but the people I think that I really feel for more than anyone are the people of Idaho, who probably want this national nightmare, some may call embarrassment, to go away. And the longer their senator decides to stay and fight, the more embarrassed that they'll feel about this this whole episode.
Now, we only have a couple seconds, and I'm going to give them to you, Laura. There's one more topic. Eddie Griffin, comedian, doing stand-up performance at a Black Enterprise event. He was using the N-word. He was yanked. Was that a good decision by the organizers? What do you think?
Well, the organizers were, of course, Black Enterprise, and in particular, Earl Graves, the major domo of Black Enterprise. And it was Earl Graves' show. He was offended by it. He hired the guy to begin with. He has the right to pull it. When he made the announcement that he was pulling the comedian, he said he would pay him. In his view, he was using offensive terminology, although we know that that kind of terminology is commonly used among comedians. But I think it's part of this continuing movement and this continuing and growing dissent coming from within the African-American community, fueled most recently by the Don Imus situation, about offensive terminology and its impact on the Black psyche. And so, yes, Earl Graves had the right to do it. He did it, and he got a lot of attention for it.
All right, guys. That's a wrap. Thanks so much.
Okay, Farai.
Thank you, Farai.
Laura Washington is a columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, and she joined us from member station WBEZ in Chicago. We also had Ron Claiborne, a correspondent for ABC News. He joined us from ABC Radio in New York City. And John Yearwood, world editor for the Miami Herald, and he joined us from member station WLRN in Miami, Florida.